It's Monday, December 20th. We are getting closer to an epic day of basketball on Christmas on Saturday the 25th. But for now, we've got a lot of catching up to do, Greg.
We certainly do. It's been a while.
Adam Azer, Greg Urbano. We're going to talk just about the NBA in general because it's been like a month since we podcasted. Okay. So let's do it. Start with the power rankings. Then we're going to look at the MVP race, Rookie of the Year, which is a foregone conclusion right now.
I would assume.
And then some of the other major storylines, including that Orlando Magic trade. All right. Number one for me is the Boston Celtics. They're 22-4. They have the best record in the East. The San Antonio Spurs have the best record in basketball at 23-3. But here's why I gave it to the Celtics. First of all, they have a 13-game winning streak. They're 2-0 against the Heat. They lost by 2 to Dallas. So they've been good against good competition, and they haven't even been fully healthy yet. Their front court has been a mess. Jermaine O'Neal has been hurt. Shaquille O'Neal just came back from a minor injury. Kendrick Perkins obviously has been out. When they're fully healthy, it's going to be really tough to beat them.
That's right. I mean, I think people expected Boston to actually start the season a little slow and then find the rhythm once everybody got healthy. The fact of the matter is they came out of the gates ready to roll and to play great basketball. Obviously, like you mentioned, Rajon Rondo been hurt slightly throughout this year. When he is hurt, they do step up. As you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the Celtics, they were, I believe, 5-1 in the games that he's missed. But if you look at what they've done, again, they rely on the veteran play. Paul Pierce, when Rondo is out, steps up his assists. He changes the way that he plays. If you noticed the other night, he had a triple-double. Again, he's just doing those things that when he knows Rondo's out that he has to do. But aside from that, when you watch this team play, nothing has really changed. They're still that team that we saw the last couple years, other than Rondo now being even better. So to see them come out with a fast start, you know, again, we didn't expect it. We kind of, you know, looked at their front line knowing that Perkins would be out and thought that they would struggle to start. But I think it shows you just how good those veteran players still are at doing what they do best. And then, of course, Rondo running the
show. So where are they for you?
Right now, I have Boston at number one as well.
Okay, good. Number two for me is the Heat.
Okay.
Number three is the Mavericks. They play tonight, by the way. Number four, the Heat and the Mavs. Number four, the Spurs. Number five, the Lakers. So even though the Spurs have the best record in basketball, I have them number four.
I see that.
But one through four, very close to me, and then the Lakers have been disappointing. At 21-7, I mean, it's hard to call that disappointing. Like, Orlando's been very disappointing at 16-10. The Lakers are 21-7, and that's disappointing for them. They're 8-2 of their last 10 games. All right, so again, for me, Celtics, Heat, Mavs, Spurs, Lakers. Give me your five.
I do not hate the Spurs as much as you obviously do.
Yeah.
I'm going to put them at number two. And as you said, there's no real rhyme to this reason. There's no reason for them doing what they are doing.
I can give you one. I mean, look, in terms of why I put the Mavericks ahead of the Spurs.
Yeah.
They beat the Spurs
head-to-head.
On the road, 103-94.
Yep. But at this point, I mean, right now, looking at the way San Antonio's playing, yeah, they're going to have those hiccups, and you do want them to beat the top teams, but what they're doing is taking care of the games they should win, and winning them right now at a pace that's certainly not what you normally see from the Spurs. They're winning games pretty handily these days, but certainly Manu Ginobili's been playing great this year. Just having him and Tony Parker healthy at the same time, which they very rarely have been able to do in the last couple of years, shows you, obviously, how good their core is, but then, of course, with the coaching of Greg Popovich, this is a team that's always going to be there, and to see them start this well this year was a surprise pretty much to everyone. So I've got them at number two. At number three, I've got the Miami Heat, obviously rolling right now.
12-game winning streak.
Got to see how far they can take this. I think what I really saw bring this team together was the game in Cleveland in which the team rallied behind LeBron.
Okay, you know,
and it brought
was
them
that
closer.
A coincidence? Or was that something that really sparked them? Because I looked at that game, I said, you know, Cleveland's making a big mistake. They are going to ignite LeBron James, and then the Heat are going to kill them. I didn't expect that to start this crazy win streak.
Yeah,
but not only are they winning games, Greg, they've won 10 of the 12 by double digits.
Yes, they're dominating teams. You know, we talked about early in the year, we said, are they going to lose any teams that are close to 500, or are they going to just continue to dominate them? And we see now that they've gotten back to dominating everyone they should dominate. Now, of course, they had a slip up the other night where they only won by a couple points.
They won by one against Washington.
Yeah, so and
that
was a team
beat the Cavs
without Blatch and without John Wall that they really should have handled that game. And really, Washington just didn't make the plays down the stretch to hold off the Heat. So if you look at what Miami's doing right now, this is what we expected. But I do think that Cleveland game sparked them. Now, it didn't just spark LeBron. It brought everyone closer. There's always a thing that happens.
No, don't say that. You don't know that. You're not in their locker room.
Based on the play on the court,
it was bound to happen.
Clearly something changed. Yes, it was. But there's always a game or an incident. that makes these guys come closer whenever you bring together a collective group of guys who haven't played together for a long time. There is a moment, and to me, that game is the moment.
I think that it's just a matter of time. Well, the fact that Wade was hurt throughout the preseason,
certainly,
and it took them a while because there were a bunch of new faces. Bosch is playing better.
Playing great.
Bosch is playing very poorly originally. Mm-hmm. LeBron is playing better. Wade is playing much better. Carlos Arroyo is hitting all these open jumpers. I mean, look, he's open. I'm not saying he's doing anything extraordinary, but he's making them. And Joel Anthony, if you watch that Heat-Knicks game on Friday night, he did such a great job at Amari Stoudemire, ended Stoudemire's run of 30-point games, 9 in a row, ended that night. So, you know, we can talk about all the offense. They're actually one of the best, if not the best, defensive team in the league right now. The Heat, to me, are number 2 ahead
of... I got them at 3.
And you got them at 3.
Yep.
So, who do you have at 4? The Mavs?
4 and 5, I round out Dallas Mavericks, Los Angeles Lakers. You know, as you mentioned, Dallas is certainly surprising people. L.A., I wouldn't say is surprising at 21-7, but... knowing that Kobe's been on the court for all these games, as has Powell, you would expect to see them in the top 2. Now, I mean, they were down at, you know, number 5 in recent weeks and then just bounced back up slowly but surely. But, you know, I think everyone knows at the end of the year, Western Conference Championship is going to be someone versus the Lakers. There's no doubt in my mind they get to the Western Conference Championship.
I would agree.
They don't play for that.
But the Spurs are playing great and Dallas is playing great. And Oklahoma City and Utah are both 19-9. They would be the 4-5 seeds. Let's go over the playoff races just real quick. In the East, it would be this: Boston, Miami 2, Chicago 3, Orlando 4, half game behind Chicago right now, Atlanta 5, New York 6, Indiana 7, and Philadelphia is 8, tied with Milwaukee. Milwaukee actually has one less loss. They're 10-15, and Philadelphia is 11-16. So that's your playoff race there. You know, Toronto, Charlotte, Detroit, Cleveland, New Jersey, Washington. They all still have a shot at the 8th seed, but I'd be shocked if New Jersey or Washington ended up in the – or Cleveland, for that matter, ended up in the playoffs. In the West, San Antonio would be 1, Dallas 2, Lakers 3, Oklahoma City 4, Utah 5, 6 is Denver at 16-10. New Orleans is 7, and then the 8th seed would be either Portland or Phoenix. Portland's 14-14, Phoenix is 13-13. We'll see how Phoenix shapes up after that trade. They get Vince Carter, they get Marcin Gortat, and they get Mikal Petras. They give up Jason Richardson, Hedo Turkoglu, and Earl Clark. All right, before we get into that trade, Greg, let's talk MVP.
Yep.
And it's relevant with the power rankings because I like the Mavs as the best team right now in the West. I'm a little worried about the Mavs shooting, but... you know, I look at the Mavs, and I watched the game against the Blazers last week. The Blazers went to a zone defense, and they forced the Mavs to the perimeter, and Dallas was cold. I don't see a sharpshooter on their team, you know, other than my number one MVP right now, Dirk Nowitzki. Yep. Fourth in the NBA in scoring, shooting 56%, and I really just look at Dallas as an aged team. They're old. Yeah. And nobody is in their prime anymore, but Dirk is playing the best basketball of his life. They'll get Bol Bol eventually, and they'll be better. But look, I mean, Kidd's not as good as he used to be. No. Marion's playing well, but he's not as good as he used to be. Caron Butler's not as good as he used to be. Yeah. Tyson Chandler's been really good for them. But Dirk, to me, is number one right now as my MVP.
I have to agree just with the fact that they're 21-5 right now. I think there are guys who have played better and been more important. I'll get to them in a second. But right now, as you said, Dirk, there are many reasons why you would put him at number one. The percentages across the board. He also shoots great free throws. So when you get to the end of the game, not only can he hit the shot, but if you foul him, he'll get to the line and hit those free throws. It's a vital component for a guy at the end of the game to be able to score both ways. And he can knock down a three if need be. So there are those things that we've known who Dirk is for all these years. I think this is the year that he's really saying, okay, I'm going to carry this team as far as I can carry them. Now that I have Tyson Chandler backing me up defensively, at least I'm confident in our defense now. So I just have to shoot the ball, play well offensively, and that's what he's done so far. So I certainly have him at number one right now. Later down in the road, I have him at number one.
Okay, good. All right, let me ask you this before we get further into the MVP discussion, because I know I'll forget. rank the top three off-season acquisitions in terms of players who change teams. So no Dwayne Wade, no Joe Johnson, no rookies. How have they done so far? So far, give me your top three and eliminate Carlos Boozer because he hasn't made
it. Are we going to eliminate LeBron James? I mean, obviously LeBron to Miami is the top one.
That's one to me.
Bosh to Miami is pretty much up there.
I go, this is what I say.
Chandler?
I say LeBron, Amare, Chandler.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree because it's this culture of play in Dallas in which really defense was never the focus, and you get a player like Tyson Chandler. I read just today where Dirk compared Tyson Chandler to Kevin Garnett going to Boston in that, now obviously he's not as skilled as Kevin Garnett, but what he said is when Kevin Garnett went to Boston, he brought a culture of defense, which guys like Paul Pierce and Ray Allen weren't completely used to yet at that point. Changed the way they played, and he obviously got them the ring. So if you look at what he's saying, he's saying basically Chandler came in here, made us play defense just by the way he hustles and he plays, which dramatically improved the team as a whole. So
that's
certainly his addition was vital.
All right, so for me, MVP number one is Dirk.
Yep.
Two, I have Amare Stoudemire. I don't anticipate him being there at the end of the year, but the Knicks are at 16-12, which is a huge improvement for them.
Yeah, they shouldn't be there.
And he's second in the NBA in scoring. He's averaging a career high in points, second best rebounding totals of his career, and he's already hit six threes, which is the most in any season for him. The turnovers are dreadful. He turns the ball over so much, but he has to do so much for the Knicks. They rely on him. They don't have a good bench, and he's really kind of taken it upon himself to be a leader. I think he's been really good on and off the court for the Knicks, and he's kind of he's changed their culture a little bit.
He certainly has, but there's no chance I could put him above what Derrick Rose has done this year. Derrick Rose has improved his game dramatically, which has made this team able to play without Boozer and now play without Joakim Noah.
They're a game and a half better than the Knicks, and they have such a better roster than the Knicks.
Again, they've played without Boozer to this point. As soon as Boozer comes back, Noah's out. If you watch what Derrick Rose is doing, not only is he doing the explosive things that we've come to expect from him, like drive to the lane and dunk all over people, he's now added the three-point shot to his game. This makes him probably the most dangerous all-around player in this league right now. Now, because of his speed. Now, obviously, LeBron is awesome. We know that. We know that when Rondo has the ball in his hand.
How could you possibly call him the most dangerous all-around player
when
LeBron James
has
is obviously the most dangerous all-around player?
Offensive, because he can hit the three better than LeBron. I think right now he's a better three-point shooter than LeBron. He will drive past you with such speed, and he will, of course, find the open man.
Okay.
To me, he's
number two for you in the MVP race?
Yes, he's absolutely number two in the MVP race. And if they get to, I mean, obviously we expect Boston and Miami to be the one seeds, but if he is able to keep them above Orlando and keep them in that three seed, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be in the top three of everyone's bout.
He's not even in my top five.
Insane. Absolutely. Maybe you haven't watched them play. I don't know.
I watched them play.
Please watch them play because this guy does everything.
Deron Williams is number three for me.
Wow.
Who's number three for you?
Rajon Rondo. The team is 22-4.
Rajon Rondo is number five for me.
Six games without him. They won five of them against
mediocre
talent. You're talking again.
But even if you look at their schedule, they have not played that great of a schedule.
They haven't got to
the
meat of their schedule yet.
No, so no even the games
it.
They've won.
No
right, they're 22-4. They're 5-1 without him. So they are 17-3 with him.
Yes.
And they haven't played that great of a schedule even in those 20 games that he has played.
Yeah. But
don't give me that competition.
Rondo averaging 3.6 more assists per game than anyone else. I've not seen a point guard outpace every other point guard.
Assist to turnover ratio?
Who would that be?
Chris Paul.
Of course.
Much better.
We know what Chris Paul is doing. But for me, this season that Rondo is playing is as good as any I've seen as a guy being the distributor. Now, again,
okay,
we know,
yeah, but the thing about him, the reason why I have him number five, and I went Nowitzki, Amare, Deron Williams, Manu Ginobili, which I know is going to be a little surprising, Rajon Rondo. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you could definitely make the case for Paul and Rose as well. The reason why I can't put Rondo up there is because even though they're 22-4, and even though he's averaging 13.8 assists per game, which is completely ridiculous, he is not an offensive threat. And when you watch teams defend him, they don't defend him.
You say he's not an offensive threat. Who hit a couple huge floaters against the Knicks at the end of the game? A couple really big shots. And also, when he was injured, still
Garnett
came out
there.
Garnett
did most of the damage.
He
and
did.
Then Paul Pierce. All right, you're looking at a guy like Deron Williams. You're looking at a guy. The other four players I have on this list, Dirk, Amare, Deron Williams, Manu Ginobili, are all taking the last shot for their teams. Rajon Rondo is not.
That's not his role.
So it's not his role doesn't mean he's not the most valuable guy out there.
Because he is
not a good shooter.
That doesn't matter.
He's shooting over 50%, but that doesn't make him a good shooter.
His value
is
to get the ball to the shooters, and he does it better than anyone.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You don't win an MVP for that.
Why? Because I don't understand why. You're the distributor, and you're making guys match their talent.
You're a great player.
What is the definition of MVP? He makes his teammates better.
That's not the definition. It's the most valuable player for a lot of people.
I think for a lot of people, you say an MVP
that's
has
an
to make.
Aspect
there's
of
always
it.
Been that argument. If the MVP has to make his player better, his teammates better. I always remember hearing that when it was Kobe versus T-Mac and all these other arguments. He makes everyone better because he gets them the ball.
So do the other guys on my list.
They do, but not 22-4. And again, you're looking at a point in the season
21-5. Dirk is 21-5.
Season. So yeah, I got Dirk at number one. I've got Dirk two spots
Ginobili
ahead.
Is 23-3.
That's a team. I'm a point guard person. I believe that the point guard is the most important position on the court. So that's why out of my five, I've got three point guards.
But listen, that's interesting that you say that. Look at what John Wall is doing. Look at what Eric Bledsoe did when he came in. You look at the point guards around the league. There are so many good point guards. Look at what Raymond Felton's doing this
year.
Russell Westbrook. Yeah, exactly. The point I would make there is that it's easier to dominate the game as a point guard than it is if you're Manu Ginobili. It's easier because the rule changes when they took away hand checking really changed the game and made it a point guard game. So when I look at a guy like Ginobili, who's not exactly gifted in terms of athleticism or skill, yet all he does is win games, hits a game winner against the Bucks as time expires on Wednesday night, the next night takes a charge, draws a charge on Carmelo Anthony to win the game. He's been their best player on the team who has the best record in the NBA. That's why I have him ahead of Rondo. I have Deron Williams ahead of Rondo because Deron Williams does more for his team.
Well, of course, he scores.
He's a scorer.
Yep.
Rajon Rondo isn't.
Yep.
Rondo's a better defensive player, and I have nothing against Rondo. I think he's outstanding. I think he's amazing, but I can't put him ahead of the other guys because he doesn't score.
I agree. I agree. Obviously, there's weakness in his game, but he is so good in the other avenues that weakness to me really doesn't matter because they've got scores. They don't need another one.
Exactly. Okay. But if you put him on a team that did,
but he's not on that team. He's playing the role he needs to play perfectly.
He is.
To me, my number four guy is someone that, for whatever reason, everyone forgets. You didn't even mention in your rant about who should be the MVP. The guy that plays in Orlando is pretty big and can play some pretty good defense. Everyone forgets about Dwight Howard. I don't care that they're a little bit worse than we thought they would be as far as their record right now, 16-10. Take him off that team, and you tell me where they'd be.
They'd be horrible. You're 100% right. There's almost like a higher standard that he gets
held
to.
It's a big man's world, but for when it comes to MVP, you have to be the guard or a forward who has the ball in your hand all the time.
I think what it is that if his team had a better record, he'd get more attention. And also, he's so consistent.
Yeah.
He does the same thing every year, every game pretty much, that he would have to go above and beyond with his numbers to get more MVP pub.
I'm not going to lie. If he was averaging 15.7 rebounds instead of Kevin Love, maybe he is on everyone's top three. So, I don't know that he is maximizing his talent yet. I still think he hasn't reached his cap.
Well, if you watch him, you can see the work that he put in with Hakeem Olajuwon helped because his offensive game is a little bit better.
Oh, he's and what I'm saying is he'll get even better. I think it's going to be scary when he hits his peak and in his prime at the same time what he can actually do.
They need to have him surrounded by players that the defense has to honor. Vince Carter's having the worst year of his career. That hurts Dwight Howard. So he's gone now. Rashard Lewis has been miserable.
Dreadful.
He's gone now. Hopefully Jason Richardson, Hedo Turkoglu can kind of revive the Magic offense, and that'll make Dwight even better. All right,
well, a big thing for them, too, is making this trade. They do rely a lot on defense, and when you get to the playoffs, you need to make stops in vital moments, and they have gotten slightly worse on defense with this move. We'll see if Jay Rich and those guys can really adapt the mind frame of playing defense again, but I wouldn't rely on Gilbert Arenas, Hedo Turkoglu, and Jay Rich to stand up and make a stop or take a charge. That's just me.
Yeah, but he is also a guy that makes everybody better on defense because they know they've got a security blanket behind him. Number five for you?
Five was tough. I mean, I had Manu going through my head. I had Amari going through my head. I had to go again with a point guard and Deron Williams. So really, like you said, Manu or Amari could be there, but I'm going D-Will.
So your top five?
Top five, Dirk, Derrick Rose, Rajon Rondo, Dwight Howard, and Deron Williams.
And I went Dirk, Amari, Deron Williams, Ginobili, Rondo. If I snubbed anyone, it was Derrick Rose for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Rookie of the Year is easy. We did a top three for Rookie of the Year. We probably have the same three. I don't know if we have the same order. Yes, we do.
We do have the same order because right now John Wall hasn't played enough. I think what I want is for him to sit out 2 or 3 weeks, get fully healthy, and get on the court rather than this, I'll play now, and then I'll get hurt.
We have him third.
Across the board, Blake Griffin, obviously, number one.
Yep, great. Blake Griffin. 21-12, that's not bad for a rookie. 51% from the field, and even though he's a power forward, he is one of the best highlight reels in basketball. He dunks like seven times a quarter. His free throw shooting's been bad, 57.5%. But athletically, he's an absolute freak of nature. You don't see power forwards that look like him. His body is just ridiculous, and he can fly. He had a spinning layup.
360.
That was ridiculous. And
it's the best layup I've ever seen in my life.
Nick Young had one that was very similar to that a week or two ago. Yeah, but this one was even better. This was on the baseline.
Not as pretty. And I don't usually go to YouTube to check out a layup.
Yeah.
I've done that for this layup. Something else.
All right. So we went Griffin 1, and then the surprise, Landry Fields, number 2. And the numbers don't tell you how good of a player he's been and what his impact is, but he's the top rebounding guard in basketball.
Wow.
7.4 rebounds per game. That's almost a rebound more than Dwayne Wade. 6.5 for Wade, 7.4 for Fields. He hits his threes. He's a hustler. He's a really good player. The Knicks, they did a great job.
The expectations of him were to do what? Just basically fit a role? I mean,
well, first of all, when they drafted him, the pundits, the critics, were killing the Knicks. This guy wasn't even a top 100 prospect. Nobody knows who he is. You know, this is a terrible pick, and who knows? And then he did well enough in the summer league where I think the Knicks were saying, oh, we might have something in him. And, worked his way into the starting lineup, and he's been instrumental for them.
Yep.
Okay, some of the major storylines. Do you like the Magic trade? This is what it was. They trade in two separate deals. They trade Rashard Lewis to the Wizards for Gilbert Arenas. They trade Marcin Gortat, Mikal Petras, and Vince Carter to the Suns for Jason Richardson, Haydu Turkoglu, and Earl Clark. The Suns also get a 2011 first-round pick in cash. All right, what do you think for the Magic?
I love the trade for the Magic. We've talked about it probably for now almost 2 years. There's two guys they need to trade, Vince Carter, Gortat. They got rid of both of those. They brought in some good talent. Now, obviously, the whole Turkoglu experiment worked well the first time. If he can come back and play the same way, it'll be great. But, you know, I mean, if you look at the addition, what I think the best addition for them is Jason Richardson. With his three-point shooting touch this year, if he can keep staying hot and shooting the way that he's been, going to dramatically improve the Magic, because that's what they've struggled with this year, as you mentioned. So put him out there, and that's the guy I think will really make them realize, okay, this trade was worth it. Now, the Gilbert Arenas experiment, we'll see. I'm not sure what exactly they expect from him.
He's coming off the bench for them.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe they want him to pace them so at the beginning of the second quarter they score and they don't lag behind. But I don't know if they envision him being on the court during crunch time or what. But in general, I'm a little weary of that part of the trade. Other than that, I think an A for the Orlando Magic.
I like the trade short term, but I worry about the Magic in the future. They are on the hook for so much salary in the next few years. They already have a $90 million plus payroll. So they're in a very expensive team, and they're not getting enough return for their investment. So they make this trade, and I think they're better today than they were on Friday, the day before they made the trade. There's really no doubt about that to me, because Lewis and Carter were giving them nothing. So Richardson should come in and give them something else. Arenas, you know, if he can stay healthy, if he can buy in and come off the bench and hit some threes.
Yeah.
Space the floor. You need to space the floor and hit threes. That's what they do.
Yeah.
They give the ball to Howard, they draw double teams, and they hit threes. That's what they've been doing for the last few years. That's all they need to do. My issue is they're still, before this trade and after this trade, not exactly an old team, but do they have one good young player other than Dwight Howard? They have nobody to build around.
Yep.
You don't build around Jameer Nelson.
No.
I'm sorry. You don't build around J.J. Redick. They are Dwight Howard and a bunch of
shooters.
Average players.
Yeah.
And I don't see how this changes that. I don't like the future, especially since they gave away a first-round pick.
It's true.
Not that their first-round picks are that high.
Not that they're ever going to get a first pick. You know,
yeah, but you know what? You can still do well if you draft well.
Yeah.
You know, you can still get a DeJuan Blair, something like that. Get somebody late. You can still look at the Spurs. Spurs do it all the time.
It's true. It's
Parker and Ginobili. So I think I don't love the future for the Magic. Their window,
it was something they had to do based on what Miami and Chicago and other teams have done.
I agree. But they don't have a long window, in my opinion, unless they can turn something into a young, talented player. The only young, talented player, the only guy that they can build around is Dwight Howard.
Yeah, which isn't a bad starting piece. But they also did this to make him happy and make him realize that, okay, my team's as willing as those teams to go out and make these moves and improve what we put out on the court.
You like it for the Suns? I don't think it's such a give up for the Suns as everybody's making it out to be, because they upgraded in their front court.
Definitely.
I mean, you give up Richardson. Look, Turkoglu wasn't doing much for them.
Nothing.
Neither was Earl Clark. You give up Richardson for Vince Carter, you downgrade. But you can't forget about Gortat.
Yeah.
He's going to make them a better team
they need
defensively
Gortat.
And underneath.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And
so
what do you think about for the Wizards?
Teams. The Wizards did what they wanted to do. You get rid of Gilbert Arenas, you start a clean slate with John Wall, and you completely forget about Agent Zero.
Yeah. Okay. The Wizards are clear winners.
Yes.
Brandon Roy and Yao Ming. We've got to talk about these guys. Yao Ming out for the season with a stress fracture in his ankle. Might be done for his career. And that probably upsets you more than it upsets most people, because you used to be a big Rockets fan.
I'm a big fan of Yao Ming because he's such a good person. I mean, if you've ever seen in-depth interviews with him, great person. He's actually picked up the English language a lot over the years, and he's very funny. He's
got
a great sense
of humor. Did he just make a comment about drinking beer and eating fried chicken?
What's that? He did.
Yeah.
He did. You know, he said, even though I'm not on the court, I'm still alive. I'm still able to do what I need to do. So, yeah, I'm very upset to see that this happens. And, you know, anytime it happens to a big man, it's a little less of a surprise, because the fact is, when you're above seven feet, things break down, you know, and your feet are going to be obviously taking the brunt of the impact. So with him, it's sad that he's out this year. I just hope it's not career-ending, like we said. But it's likely, you know, you look at both him and Greg Oden and you say, are any of these guys, either one of them, ever going to play a full NBA season from here on out? And I'd probably bet against it before I'd bet for it.
What I think is interesting is, how will NBA general managers approach the NBA draft when they are trying to choose between a big man and a wing or a point guard? If we could do it over again, I think Durant – it's dumb to say, just looking at the results, obviously you take Durant over Oden. But if you just look at the fact that Oden's been injured, if the same situation comes up again, I think the player that's more like Durant gets taken over the player that's more like Oden.
Absolutely. I think if you're smart, if you're a drafting guru, which I would assume you are if you work for an NBA team,
I look back at those things.
You might as well be. I mean, you look back, and is it worth the risk? And now, obviously, the reward is probably greater if you got a 7-foot shot blocker, but the risk is always there. So stick with something that you know is going to work out.
Kevin Love. You wanted to talk about him.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's not
bad.
From
what I hear.
Averaging 15.7 rebounds per game. That's ridiculous.
Not only that, scoring over 20 points. I mean, this is
14 straight double-doubles.
Yeah. You know, this is a guy who I think everyone expected to be a double-double machine, but not a 21-15 machine. And this is something that we've not seen from a big man in a very, very long time. You're talking about guys like Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal. So if we finish the season and Kevin Love's over 20-15, it's one of the most impressive seasons of all time. Now, obviously, he's doing it for a team that no one notices and no one cares about, so it's going to fly
underneath. They are 6-22, and they have lost 5 straight.
Yeah, so obviously his efforts are going to fly under the radar pretty much all season, but you talk about a guy the other night, 43-17. He can do everything you want on the court. He can shoot the three. He can rebound. He's a very good passer, and he shoots good percentages from all over. And then, of course, it's the hustle. You know, rebounding is one thing. It's hustling. You know, and it's not size, because if it were just size, every 7-footer would have average over 10 rebounds. Clearly, he puts in the effort throughout every single possession. And I don't know that there's anyone else on the court that plays as hard as him.
We're going to predict the 5 Christmas games now. You ready?
Let's do it.
Just say a team. Chicago at New York.
Ooh, Chicago.
Actually, I know it seems like a homer pick. I actually think I'm going to go with New York.
All right.
Boston at Orlando.
I mean, that's one that especially...
By the way, sorry to interrupt. It's Monday as we record this.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are injuries throughout the week or something, some other storyline, it could change. But yeah.
Yeah, that game is going to be tough for Orlando, working in some new pieces when Boston obviously is... They've got their guy. So whether Rondo plays or not, going Boston. Even without
Boston
Rondo.
Is the logical pick. I'm going to take Boston. What I think is that all those new pieces are going to be so fired up for this game that they might play out of their minds.
Very possible.
You like Chicago. I like New York. We both like Boston. Miami at the Lakers.
Such a great game. You know, Bynum now getting back into the mix. He's not 100% there yet. I would like to see perhaps Miami give some minutes to Mike Miller. I know he's nearing his return. At L.A., I'm going to have to go with the Lakers. Kobe on Christmas is very hard for me to see him lose in that game. As long as he's alive and on the court, I'll go with the Lakers.
We talked about this in the fantasy basketball podcast I did with Sergio Gonzalez today. He said, predict Kobe's stat line. I think he's going to score a lot of points. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to do a lot of good things, but I think he's going to take too many shots.
He'll try to do too much.
I think he's going to game seven of the NBA finals it, and I think he's going to shoot over 25 times maybe. Mm-hmm. I like the Heat in this game.
All right. I mean,
Heat are playing so well.
Yeah, if the Heat does win, it's not like it's a dramatic upset, but Kobe on Christmas Day is tough to
beat. Yeah, they're tough to beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I like the Lakers. I'll stick with the Heat.
Stick with the Heat.
I like Oklahoma City to beat Denver at home.
Yeah, I do too. Denver's played some really, really good games recently and then had some games where they maybe just don't want to play or really want to show up. But that's really five good games to watch for an NBA fan on a great day.
So we'll both take the Thunder and then Portland and Golden State. I will take...
Gotta go Golden State. Brandon Roy's not going to be playing. I don't know if Curry will be on the court for the Warriors, but I'll
they're 2-8 in their last 10. You're going to tell me you have to go with Golden State?
I'm going to go with Golden State.
I'm going to go with... Wow, you know, those are those are arguably the best fans in basketball, and they get themselves a Christmas game.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough place to win.
Yep.
But I'm taking the road team.
All right.
Give me Portland.
All right.
I mean, the Warriors, come on, they're 9-17.
I mean, obviously, yeah, you don't think that they're a better team than them, but I'm thinking at home they'll win that game.
Okay. Last thing we need to discuss is something that really it just shocked me. It shook me to my core. Because I can't believe what Gregor Bano said to me earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
You said that of all the sports,
yes,
coaches have the biggest impact in the NBA.
In basketball.
In basketball.
Yep.
Football.
Been around it enough. No, I mean, look, the way I see it, especially timeouts at the end of halves and at the end of games and the plays that you draw up. The plays.
Management in football is
the
huge.
Plays that you draw up. But I think also more of it is on the coach in basketball. And I do feel like the immediate impact of a great coach is felt quicker on a basketball court. I think you take Coach K and you put him on a bad team, I don't care what that team is, it'll take about a week and they're much better. You look at just the impact that these coaches have, and there's a reason why Coach K is nearly in the Final Four just about every year. It doesn't even matter about the talent. I mean, if you look at Duke's team last year, they're not nearly as talented as they are this year, but they won the national championship. To me, it's Coach K. And especially with young players, the coach is even more important. Now, when you get to the NBA, you might coach LeBron James and have really zero impact because if you look at Cleveland, we all know really who was the powering force of that team when he was there. But then you get some teams that really need a leader and someone to show them a little direction. If you put a Phil Jackson or a Coach K there or these guys who really know what they're doing, it's easier for them to flip it around. In football, you really need the talent. You need the quarterback. You need those things in place to really have an impact.
Look what Bill Belichick does.
Look at his quarterback.
Look at his quarterback, yeah, but look at the defenses. He gets rid of all these players. He hardly ever re-signs players or extends them to big deals. He trades Richard Seymour. I mean, yeah, Vince Wilfork's back, and they've kept Tom Brady, and I know that. But if you look at the secondary, for example, every year it's just like a revolving door, and he coaches them up.
Yes, he does.
And, yeah, and if you want to get really technical, they've had a very bad pass defense this year. But it's gotten a lot better, and they're still the best team in football. And now he's the best.
He's got defensive coordinators. He's got linebackers
I understand,
coaches.
But,
he's got
but no, he doesn't.
Line coaches.
I think he is his own defensive coordinator. I'm not sure about that.
But he still has coaches
but listen,
at each position.
I know that. But what, the Heat, they don't have more coaches? Basketball coaches don't have an assistant?
Not the voice they hear most prominently, every single player, is the head coach.
So now, the same thing with football.
Nah,
listen,
practice.
This is my argument against you. One player dominates basketball games.
Could.
One player does not dominate
Could
football
dominate
games.
Basketball games.
Football is a much, much more of a team-oriented sport.
Yes.
Basketball is a game where one guy can go out, put on a show, and have much more of an impact. That's why coaching is more important in football than basketball.
See, I do agree that, yes, you could have one guy go off, but the immediate impact a coach has with his players during the game, everything, to me, coaching is such a big thing. Because you can lose a game just because the coach doesn't make the right timeout call or doesn't substitute in the right guy.
But Absolutely. All the film work, I think, in football is more extensive than
course.
In basketball because you have a week to prepare.
Yeah.
So I think the coaches put more into it, into the film room.
Of course.
There's more studying. That stuff happens in basketball, but not to the extent that it happens in football.
Well, plus every play in football is you're all standing there waiting for it to start, and then you can kind of see what's going on, and then you break down what you know from film. Basketball, it's reactionary.
Well, if you want to email us and agree with me, it's it's our email address is CBSI, the letter I, CBSI podcast feedback at CBS.com. CBSI podcast feedback at CBS.com. It's good to be back, Greg.
Certainly is, and we'll be doing this on the weekly. I would assume so, with college football pretty much done.
Don't hold me to that. In fact, you're probably not even going to be here next week.
That's right. Next week,
I will, but you won't.
We get off, but unfortunately, you're too important to the company.
Yeah, exactly.
That you have to be.
That must be it. For Greg Urbano, I'm Adam Azer. Thanks a lot, everyone. Talking hoops with you here for CBSSports.com.